The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn and Dan Friedel. Later, Gregory Stockel presents this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. We close with the next part of our U.S. History series. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Scientists have released a more detailed version of the first image of a black hole. That first image, released 4 years ago, showed a blurry, round-shaped orange object. Now, researchers have used machine learning methods to create an improved picture. The new image was recently published in the Astrophysical Journal Letters. The same shape remains as in the first image, but it has a narrower ring and sharper resolution. Scientists have said the black hole in the image sits at the center of a galaxy called M87, more than 53 million light years from Earth. A light year is the distance light travels in a year, about 9.5 trillion kilometers. The mass of the black hole is 6.5 billion times greater than that of Earth's sun. A network of radio telescopes around the world gathered the data used to make the image. But even with many telescopes working together, holes remained in the data. In the latest study, scientists depended on the same data but used machine learning methods to fill in the missing information. The resulting picture looks similar to the image, but with a thinner donut and a darker center, the researchers said. For me, it feels like we're really seeing it for the first time, said the lead writer of the study, Leah Medeiros. She is an astrophysicist at the Institute for Advanced Study in New Jersey. She said it was the first time the team had used machine learning to fill in the data holes. With a clearer picture, researchers hope to learn more about the black hole's properties and gravity in future studies. Medeiros said the team also plans to use machine learning on other images of space objects. This could include the black hole at the center of our galaxy, the Milky Way. The study's four writers are members of the Event Horizon Telescope, EHT, project. It is an international effort begun in 2012 with the goal of directly observing a black hole's nearby environment. A black hole's event horizon is the point beyond which anything, stars, planets, gas, dust, and all forms of electromagnetic radiation can escape. Dimitrios Saltis is an astrophysicist at Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta, Georgia. He told Reuters news agency the main reason the first image had many gaps is because of where the observing telescopes sit. The telescopes operate from the tops of mountains and are few and far apart from each other, Saltus said. As a result, the telescope system has a lot of holes, and scientists can now use machine learning methods to fill in those gaps, he added. I'm Brian Lynn.
The Phantom of the Opera closed Sunday night after 35 years on New York City's famous Broadway. The musical theater show opened on January 26, 1988. It completed nearly 14,000 performances. The show ended with another performance of its most famous song, The Music of the Night. The performance included many well-known singers and actors who had parts in the show over the years. The show's creator, Andrew Lloyd Webber, attended the final performance. So did Sarah Brightman, the singer who first played the lead character, Christine. The two came on stage for a final celebration. A video played that honored those involved in the show who had died. Some attendees drank sparkling wine as shiny gold and silver paper came down from the show's famous chandelier. Lloyd Webber dedicated the final performance to his son, Nick, who recently died after a long illness. The show is the story of the Phantom, a composer with a misshapen face who wears a mask and haunts the Paris Opera House. He falls in love with Christine, a young singer. Actors, singers, and Broadway producers with close connections to Lloyd Webber were there too, including Glenn Close and Lin-Manuel Miranda. Lloyd Webber's other musicals include Cats, Jesus Christ Superstar, Evita, Sunset Boulevard, and School of Rock. With Phantom closing, he has only one show playing on Broadway, Bad Cinderella. The longest-running Broadway show is now Chicago, which opened in 1996. New York theater experts say many shows had difficulties coming back after Broadway closed for 18 months during the COVID-19 pandemic. Some, such as Miranda's Hamilton, returned to full audiences, but other shows, including Phantom, depend heavily on out-of-town visitors. Many tourists have yet to come back to New York City. The show was supposed to close in February of this year, but its run was extended because of increased interest. I'm Dan Friedel.
Wildflower meadows have been growing in popularity among gardeners, and for good reason. A meadow is a usually flat area of land that is covered with tall grass. Meadows are easy to take care of, do well with little water, and provide food for birds, animals, and insects. And they are nice to look at. Wildflowers are native plants, so if you want to create your own wildflower meadow, your plant choices will depend on where you live. If you are in the United States or Canada, start your search on the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center's website, www.wildflower.org/plants. Choose your area and narrow down the search by choosing your water and sun requirements, among other choices. Then, take a look at the list for plants that you like. The usual meadow is about 60% native grasses and 40% flowering perennials. But there is no harm in changing these amounts. You can also buy ready-made wildflower seed mixes made for your area. If you choose this, just be sure that the kinds of plants included work for the soil, sunlight, and wetness conditions your garden provides. But do not think you can just spread the seeds and walk away. You must always prepare your soil for any garden, wild or not. If you do not, you will likely not enjoy your results. First, remove any unwanted plants and grasses that are already present. Digging them up would require the most amount of work and risks moving the seeds of unwanted plants to the surface. That could make problems worse. A more effective way to remove grasses and unwanted plants is by using high temperatures or removing oxygen from the area. These methods do require time. Place cardboard over your garden and then cover it with 10 to 15 centimeters of mulch. The grass and other unwanted plants under it will die from not having enough oxygen by autumn. Another method is to cover the area with weighed down plastic. This method can be quicker because as the plastic heats up, it cooks the plants under it. This autumn or next spring, turn the soil in the new bed and include a small amount of compost. If you have heavy clay soil, mix in sand to improve water flow. Do not add fertilizer or use too much compost, because wildflowers do better with low soil fertility. Yearly wildflower plants should be planted only in spring to permit time for them to grow, produce, and drop seeds, which will begin to grow the following year. Perennial plants, however, can be planted in fall. Most wildflower seeds are very small, so combining one part of your seed mix with 10 parts of dry sand can make spreading them easier. Spreading the seeds by hand may work for small beds, but it is better to use a seed spreader for larger areas. To make sure the seeds get good contact with the soil, walk over them or pass over the area with a garden roller. But be sure to not bury the seeds. If you are spreading the seeds in spring, keep the area lightly watered if there is no rainfall, as the season's warming temperatures will threaten to dry them out. Expect some yearly plants to flower the first year, but you may have to wait a year or two for perennials to flower. In the meantime, keep the bed free of tall, unwanted plants, which could take away sunlight from your growing wildflowers. At the end of the growing season, leave your meadow standing to provide food and shelter for overwintering insects and wildlife. Cut it down in spring, just before new growth begins. I'm Gregory Stockel.
And that was this week's Health and Lifestyle Report, presented by Gregory Stockel. Greg joins me now to talk more about the story. Thanks for coming back this week, Greg.
You're welcome. Happy to be back, Ashley.
So, is there anything you would like to tell us about planting a meadow in a garden?
Well, I wanted to talk about overwintering insects and animals. It is a very common biological process for some insects and animals in colder climates.
Yes, large animals like bears and small insects like beetles rest during the winter.
Exactly, Ashley. This process is called hibernation. It happens when animals spend the winter sleeping or resting. It's very interesting because it affects the biological processes of the animal or insect. It's important to not cut down your meadow so you can leave a shelter for animals and insects to hibernate.
What sorts of animals or insects can you expect to hibernate in your garden?
Well, in North America, you can expect animals like groundhogs or squirrels. Reptiles will even hibernate. Some snakes, turtles, and frogs will make a home in your garden for the winter. Even insects like bees need a place to rest during the cold weather.
I didn't know so many different kinds of animals might be hibernating in a garden over the winter. Thanks again for joining us this week, Greg.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Franklin Roosevelt's first 3 months as president was one of the most exciting periods in American politics. Roosevelt entered the White House in March 1933. The nation was in crisis. Banks across the country had closed their doors. The Great Economic Depression was at its lowest point. Roosevelt and the Congress moved quickly to help people with little food or money. They launched a series of major economic programs. I'm Doug Johnson with Mario Ritter. We talk about the laws and policies of President Franklin Roosevelt, including those known as the Second New Deal.
Conditions improved within a year after Roosevelt took office. There was no question about that. Banks were open. More people had jobs. Farmers were doing better. And poor people were not so close to disaster as before. However, conditions were far from perfect. 10 million workers still did not have jobs. Young people leaving school were lucky to find any job at all. And most business owners were only earning small profits, if any at all. After the worst crisis was past, some groups of Americans began to attack Roosevelt and his programs. Conservatives were the first to break with the president. They accused Roosevelt of socialist economic policies.
Much more serious to Roosevelt was criticism from reformers within his own party. A number of popular leaders with strong ideas began to attract support from large numbers of Americans. Roosevelt saw his national unity falling apart. Conservatives were accusing him of socialism. Leftist opponents said he was doing too little to end the Depression. He saw that he had to change his path. Roosevelt knew he had little chance to regain the support of conservative Americans. His policies were too progressive. So, halfway through his first term as president, he began to support new reforms in an effort to win more support from the left.
The Supreme Court made the president's efforts easier. Early in 1935, the court ruled that several of Roosevelt's earlier programs violated the Constitution and ordered an end to them. Among them were major programs for farmers and industrial planning. The court's decisions forced Roosevelt to create new programs and try new ideas. One of his first new actions was to support a plan for government controls on companies that supplied water and produced electricity. Another was a measure to give jobs to workers. A third new law forced companies doing business with the federal government to pay workers a minimum wage. And the government also began enforcing a new law to control the actions of stock market traders and investment companies. At the same time, Roosevelt began to attack large companies. He spoke about the importance of small businesses in a democracy. He warned the nation that large companies had too much power. And he called for new actions to increase business competition and control large companies.
Roosevelt supported and Congress passed two laws during this period that would change the lives of working Americans for years to come. The first law gave more power to labor unions. The second created a federal system to provide money for workers after they retired. Roosevelt's administration had already supported labor unions in an earlier law, but that law was overruled by the Supreme Court. So, in 1935, the Congress passed a new law called the National Labor Relations Act. The act created a National Labor Relations Group to help negotiate agreements between workers and business owners. It gave all workers the right to join or form a labor union, and it ordered business owners to negotiate with a union if it represented most of the workers. The new law, for the first time, gave unions real power and negotiating rights.
The other very important law passed during this period created the National Social Security System. The law forced every worker and business owner to pay a small amount of money each month to the federal government. In exchange, the government paid money to workers who had retired or lost their jobs. The new law did not serve everyone. Farmers, government workers, and a number of other groups were not included in the system. The plan also did nothing to help people who were already unemployed. A person had to have a job after the new system began and then lose it to get money. However, the National Social Security Law established a system that would grow and become a central part of American life.
Roosevelt also supported other new laws during this period that changed the American economy. A banking act gave the nation's central bank, the Federal Reserve Board, new power to control the total amount of money in use. Another law increased taxes for rich people. A third law limited the power of major companies to gain control of local electric utility companies. The new laws openly challenged the power of big companies, big banks, and big money. Roosevelt rejected the idea that government should cooperate with major companies. Instead, he accused many of the companies of ruining the economy and hurting the working man. He called on Congress to help small companies and the average American.
Perhaps the most important change during this period was that Roosevelt became willing to accept a federal budget that was not balanced. He began to agree with the ideas of Mariner Eccles, the head of the Federal Reserve Bank. Eccles believed that government had a duty to spend extra money during times of economic crisis. The extra money, he said, would create jobs for more people. They could buy more goods, and this would increase economic growth. Eccles believed that it was good policy for a government to spend more money than it earned through taxes during such periods. He argued that a growing economy would increase wages and bring in more tax money.
Roosevelt's administration had spent more money than it earned ever since it took office. But the president and his advisors did so only to end the economic crisis. They believed that it was a necessary evil. But Eccles and others told Roosevelt that it was not bad for the nation if the government spent more than it earned. The British economist John Maynard Keynes published an influential book that supported the same policy. And Roosevelt and his top advisors began to accept the new idea.
Roosevelt's economic policies were known as the New Deal. But the many changes he made during this period became known as the Second New Deal. They included some of the most important pieces of legislation in the history of the country, such as the National Labor Relations Act and the Social Security Law. And Roosevelt's willingness to accept an unbalanced budget would be the first step toward federal budget deficits that would grow steadily in the years to come. Budget deficits would jump under President Lyndon Johnson during the war in Vietnam. They would be an important cause of economic inflation in the United States and the world in the 1970s. And Americans would elect Ronald Reagan president in 1980, partly to try to bring federal spending under control. In 1935, however, most Americans agreed with Franklin Roosevelt that budget deficits were necessary to fight the serious economic depression.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm